Guy Benson Show will be back in 1 minute. Benson will be on in 30 seconds.
Unconventional talk from a fresh, unconventional conservative, The Guy Benson Show.
Welcome into Wednesday, September 16th, 2020, and welcome into The Guy Benson Show. I am Guy Benson, your host, and very honored to be. Thank you for listening. GuyBensonShow.com, that's the website here at the program. If you don't know me, that's fine. Maybe you're new at this, and if so, that's awesome. Glad you're here. I'm the political editor at TownHall.com. I'm a Fox News contributor. I host this program, which is available live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time every weekday, Monday through Friday, across the country on a number of fantastic affiliates, growing number of affiliates. Also, if you happen to be unavailable during that time slot or parts of it, the podcast is always available to you for free. GuyBensonShow.com. After the fact, you can also use some of our partners to access that podcast, whether it's iTunes, like Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Pandora, some of those streaming services that I just mentioned. All great options. They're all right there at GuyBensonShow.com. On the program today, later this hour, we will speak with Jessica Tarloff, one of our colleagues here at Fox News, on the Democratic side. How is she feeling about the state of the race? Curious to get her thoughts on the peace deals from yesterday, poo-pooed in some quarters on the left. See what Jesse has to say. Very excited to kick off the next hour, and I say kick off deliberately, Reese Davis of ESPN, host of College Game Day. He will be here. Big news in the Big Ten. Football coming back in October in that conference. It's, of course, the conference that I root for. I'm a Northwestern grad, Northwestern Wildcats fan, and it was unclear whether we were going to have Big Ten football. Now it appears that we will, with a very rigorous testing regime. We will talk to Reese Davis about how this all came together. And I'll just note also, there's a political component to that as well. Right? Joe Biden had actually run ads featuring empty Big Ten stadiums, basically blaming Donald Trump. It didn't have to be this way. This is Trump's fault. Now, of course, other leagues are playing. I think a lot of Big Ten fans were saying, well, hang on. If the ACC can play and the Big 12 can play and the SEC is going to start playing and some of these other minor conferences, high school is playing all over the place, NFL playing, some with fans in the stands, why can't we? Fair question. Totally fair question. I get some of the concerns on the other side, but Joe Biden was trying to blame Donald Trump for the lack of Big Ten football. Now there is Big Ten football coming. Donald Trump's taking a victory lap. He was involved. He was applying pressure. He was on the phone. And so, like everything else these days, even football, college football, became political. Everything's political now, which is actually sort of depressing and exhausting. Let's bring you the stats real quick with a Fox News alert. We do it every day at the top of the show. Coronavirus confirmed cases, 6,571,867 in the United States. The death toll, 195,053. The Dow is up 198 points to 28,193. The market's surging. We just heard some remarks from the chairman of the Federal Reserve, so we'll keep an eye on that as well. Before we go any further, let's introduce our first guest. It is Congressman Adam Kinzinger, Republican from Illinois, in the 16th District in the land of Lincoln. Congressman, great to have you back.
Hey, it's good to be with you. Everything is political, you're right. It's exhausting.
Yes, and you represent a district, as I mentioned, in Illinois, which is right smack dab in the middle of Big Ten country. You know that I'm a Northwestern Big Ten guy. There's a lot of Big Ten football fans, I'm sure, in your district. And I just kind of wonder, as an elected official, because I've seen a number of senators put out statements about the return of Big Ten football, when you think about these questions or hear from constituents, I'm not saying there's an easy or correct answer to any of it, but there does seem to be some incoherence where you have high school football being played, certain big-time college football not, other big-time college football, yes, playing. The NFL's back. Some stadiums have fans. Some do not. I've mentioned in Kansas City where the football stadium is allowed to have fans, but the baseball stadium down the street cannot, both outdoor stadiums. It seems like a lot of people are trying to muddle through this, which is understandable. I'm just curious, as someone on the political side, an elected official, how do you think through this? Because sports are a huge, not just industry, that employ a lot of people. Obviously, it's a big part of our culture, too.
Yeah, so I go up to Madison, Wisconsin a lot. I'm in the Guard up there. So, you know, I always think about what's going to happen to downtown Madison, all the bars and all the restaurants and everything. And, you know, I think through it like this. I think part of the reason that there's so much confusion is because the virus itself has become political, obviously, no doubt. And you see that in, you know, some on our side that believe masks are, you know, a joke. Well, there's some benefit to masks. And then there's some on the other side that, you know, scream at you if you're alone by yourself outside and there's a high wind blowing and you don't have a mask on. And I think what you're seeing right now is a result of that division. You don't. It's not really based on science. It's based on your political beliefs. And so, you know, as you mentioned, with the outdoor stuff, like people aren't getting this virus as long as they're being responsible from being outside. And so I think, yeah, I think through it in the level of if you're making a decision, whether it's a school or sports, it needs to be based on real science, and it needs to be based on what we started this whole thing as, which is flatten the curve, not eliminate the virus, because the virus ain't going anywhere until we get a vaccine, and it's probably still not going anywhere after that. We have to live with it, and but we just need to make sure the hospital capacity can maintain it, and so far it has.
What do you think, and I think you're exactly right about flattening the curve. I think that was the point from the beginning. That was digestible for the American people. Then the goalposts, to bring it back to sports, shifted several times. And I know we've gotten a lot of praise for the Andrew Cuomos of the world, but his state was almost the paradigmatic example of what not to do based on the flatten the curve graph that we all looked at, whereas Florida and Texas and California, Arizona, Georgia, those states, much maligned, especially the red states, they were examples of what we're supposed to do in terms of delaying and flattening the curve. So a lot of it does feel like it is purely about partisan politics and nothing else. You mentioned the vaccine, Congressman. What do you make of some of these comments we've gotten now recently from a slate of Democratic candidates, not just for Congress and Senate, but even Joe Biden's running mate, Kamala Harris, basically saying we shouldn't necessarily trust a vaccine that is developed during the Trump era because of Donald Trump? That seems that seems potentially problematic.
Yeah, it's insane. And I think it was the president who said, and he was right on, he's like, it's kind of the new anti-vaxxer movement. And, you know, except now your anti-vaccine thing isn't based on, you know, some study that was, you know, discredited. It's now based on somebody's politics. And I'll tell you what, these companies that are developing this vaccine, God bless them, by the way, and the reason you don't want to do this solely in like a national laboratory is because, you know, we have multiple vaccines being developed at one time. Any one of those could not work, and or they could end up having side effects that are unusable. If we kept everything in a national lab, so to speak, that one we're working on could end up not working. And so that's why the private sector is awesome. And I'll tell you what the private sector is not going to do. The private sector is not going to rush out something that doesn't work. They're going to do their research. But the difference is this administration, and I've seen it in my own district when I was working with an issue with hand sanitizer in a distillery in my district, this administration is cutting unnecessary red tape that we all know slows things down in the government process and allowing the development to happen safely but without unnecessary delay. And that should be, frankly, how we should look at government from here out on any issue.
Congressman, I want to ask you about what happened yesterday at the White House. Middle East peace deals, two of them signed, two of the only four in history, with the modern state of Israel and Arab Gulf states, Bahrain, UAE. We've seen some people on the left, although it's been a pretty weak effort to try to minimize it, saying, well, they weren't at war, they never went to war. Well, they were both patrons and have been patrons of the Palestinians. This is a paradigm shift, and you wouldn't have seen some of this without almost certainly the consent of the Saudis, right? The Saudis have allowed Israeli planes to now fly over their airspace as a part of this. This is a real shift within the region vis-a-vis Iran. This is a big change for Iran, obviously, an unwelcome one for them, an unwelcome development for the Palestinians, who have been the number one impediment by far to Israeli-Palestinian peace. To me, I think this is, you know, one of the biggest stories of the year, in a year filled with big stories, and yet it seems like there are some people so fanatically opposed to the president that they either want to give it short shrift, move past it quickly, poo-poo it, or diminish it. I know that you spent a lot of time over there, a lot of time thinking about these types of issues and U.S. foreign policy in the region. Your overall assessment of the Abraham Accords yesterday?
I think it's massive. And, you know, I think whether it's UAE, any of the countries, frankly, in the Middle East, they always, in recent times, more or less, have had started to have a bit of a relationship with Israel, but they could never admit it, right? There was always a fear of admitting anybody worked together. There was always that tension. When I went to Saudi Arabia, actually, I went to Israel, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, I think maybe it was a year ago, 2 years ago now. We had to land from Israel, land in Jordan, taxi, literally not forget out of the plane, taxied back to the takeoff point and took off so that we could land in Saudi Arabia, because at that point now we were originating from Jordan. So that's how insane all this was. This is a massive deal. And anybody that's trying to take this and say it's really not a big deal, or it's politics, or it's XYZ, I mean, these are the people that literally, if, you know, it started raining fluffy puppies and everybody could have a free puppy, they'd be like, well, that's just a distraction, you know. And this is a huge deal for Middle East politics.
Well, Nancy Pelosi called it a distraction from COVID.
That's right. She did. She called it a distraction. And the other thing is, these are people that for some reason are defending Iran now at every turn. If you think about the killing of Soleimani, they said that was illegal, even though it was in Iraq and he was a combatant. If you look at what's going on in Yemen, they're obsessed with Saudi Arabia and the United States' role in Yemen, and mention nothing about the fact that the Houthis and Iranians park weapons in the middle of highly dense areas so that it kills civilians. And not to mention that Iran has not sent $1 of humanitarian aid to that conflict, and we've sent a lot. Their knee-jerk reaction is to blame America and, for whatever reason now, defend Iran. And this is just something that they don't want to give the president credit for, because in their mind, it's going to help his election. And the biggest, highest calling to them right now is not a greater peace. It's not stability. Their highest calling is defeating Donald Trump, because to some of them, not all of them, that, in fact, is their religion.
All right, Congressman, I want to get to two more topics here in the short time that we have remaining. It's Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Illinois, here on the program. There's the China Task Force report that's scheduled to come out, I believe, next week. Remind us, is this a task force that was bipartisan, then the Democrats walked away? What can we expect from this report?
Yeah, this is. This is the one I was asked to be on last fall, and we were getting ready to announce it in February, and the Democrats walked away, and that also coincided with when Nancy Pelosi said the president was racist and everybody should go eat in Chinatown because of the China travel ban. This will be coming out next week or the next. It'll be soon. I've already seen most of it. It's really good, and it's basically going to be a legislative blueprint of what we need to do over the next few years as Congress and as a country to get a handle on the ground that we've ceded to China and to be on the offensive again. It's going to be a massive. It's also going to have a little bit about the origins of this virus, which we've already put through the firewall in China, and it went so viral that, in fact, the Chinese government had a one-hour special on TV to refute everything it said. So this is going to be a huge, huge deal, and I'm very proud of the work that Chairman McCall did on this and our task force, and I think it's going to be game-changing if we all decide to work together and actually fight for this country.
But this was a Republican-only document, is that right?
Yeah, but our recommendations are going to be bipartisan, and we intended this to be bipartisan, but, you know, the Democrats decided that the politics was more important.
Speaking of, last question, we saw the House pass that crazy $3 trillion COVID bill with all sorts of unrelated stuff, tax cuts for the rich, you know, diversity requirements, all sorts of nonsense. Months ago, the Republicans in the Senate had a bill to at least begin debate on a more modest and targeted piece of legislation that was filibustered by every Democrat in the Senate. Now it sounds like Nancy Pelosi, like the absolute no that the Democrats have given, it's starting to backfire. There are a lot of anxious members on the Democrat side in the House saying, we need something that's a compromise here. Pelosi's strategy is not working for us. Do you think there might actually be some progress here, or is Pelosi just wielding the iron political fist and the American people can basically pound sand?
Yeah, I think it changes every day. I'm not optimistic that we get anything done before the election, because I think her obsession is simply the election. You know, every bill to this point, to the last one, was bipartisan, and then she decided to go a partisan route, knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. So now if the heat comes on higher, and that's what we need to keep doing, I think we can get a bipartisan compromise that's right for the country. Otherwise, we'll probably have to wait to after the election, because her obsession is November.
And in a sentence, how's your election going?
Oh, we're feeling pretty good. We're out there not taking anything for granted, but, you know, fighting the left-wing socialist movement, and we're going to keep Illinois somewhat red.
At least in your little neck of the woods.
That's right. Knock
on wood. Adam Kinzinger, Republican congressman from the 16th District of Illinois, here on the Guy Benson Show. Always fun, sir. Thanks for your time. We look forward to next time.
Anytime, my man. Take care.
And we will continue just getting started after this break.
Energetic, informed, fast-paced, Guy Benson Show.
What does COVID-19 have to do with losing your home? A lot, actually. The FBI reports that since the virus struck, cybercrime is up 75%, and it gets worse. The legal title to all of our homes are now online. The crime is called home title theft, and it's everywhere. Cyber criminals find the title of your home online, forge your signature on a quitclaim deed, and refile as the new owner of your home. You are off the title. They destroy you by taking out loans against your home. They steal the cash and stick you with the payments. You might not even know about it until you get a late payment notice or a foreclosure notice. Home Title Lock protects your home's legal title. Your home is your most valuable asset and your safe haven. Home Title Lock puts a virtual barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect tampering, they shut it down. First things first, go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then use code GUY, G-U-Y, for 30 free days of protection. That's code GUY at HomeTitleLock.com.
Okay, some good news during a challenging time for everybody, and this could really help. You may know hundreds of thousands of people have already made the switch to MediShare, which is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And with so many people looking at how they pay for health care right now, seeing premiums going up or the cost of COBRA plans, MediShare has extended their special offer, and a lot of people have taken advantage of it. Simply apply by September 30th, and they will waive your new member fee. That's $170 savings. And, of course, that's just the start. The typical family saves $500 a month after making the switch. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's health care costs, and it's worked beautifully for decades. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to get your additional savings. Here it is. Call 844-47-BIBLE. That's 844-47-BIBLE. 844-47-BIBLE.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, it's the Fox News Rundown, a deeper dive into the major and controversial stories, tapping into the massive reporting resources of Fox News to provide a full picture of the news of the day. You'll hear a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else, going far beyond the headlines.
You know, I want people to know the truth. Nobody owns me. I'm going to do my job the same way, no matter who I work for.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. America's listening to Fox News. Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
In August of 1970, New York attorney Bella Abzug, one of the most outspoken leaders in the growing women's movement, gave testimony on the Equal Rights Amendment.
We felt this transcendent joy, for woman's life has been imminent. As Simone de Beauvoir did, it has never been completely human because so few of us have had this great experience. that all of us have had tonight of creating in history, of taking the torch from those great women who won us the vote 50 years ago and carrying that torch high so that it will shine on the lives not only of our daughters, but shines in our own faces in self-affirmation.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
This is Fox on Justice. Police in Salt Lake City are describing it one way, the family very differently. What is known is that 13-year-old Lyndon Cameron was shot and wounded while running away from a police officer outside his home.
A violent psych issue involving a juvenile.
Police Sergeant Keith Horrocks telling Fox 13 in Salt Lake City Cameron had threatened people with a weapon.
During a short foot pursuit, an officer discharged his firearm.
Lyndon's mother says that's not what happened at all. Golda Barton says her son has Asperger's, a kind of autism, and was having an emotional episode. She called 911 asking for help, and when police arrived, Lyndon ran. But Barton says he was not threatening anybody. Lyndon is recovering from his wounds. Salt Lake police say all their officers are trained to handle emotional distress issues, but no weapon was found, and they continue their investigation. Lyndon's family wants answers. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
This is the most important election in the history of our country.
The end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight.
President Donald Trump, former Vice President Joe Biden, face off in an epic showdown to decide the future of our nation. And America's premier journalist, Chris Wallace, moderates this can't-miss event. The biggest stage, the biggest stakes, the future of America. Chris Wallace moderates the first presidential debate, September 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. America is watching.
It's the Guy Benson Show. So last night, President Trump was on ABC News for an hour and a half. It was one of these town hall meetings moderated by George Stephanopoulos. They had voters asking some of the questions, and I've seen bits and pieces of it. It was obviously just a string of very tough questions, which is fine. I mean, the thing is with Stephanopoulos, I think he's a smart guy. I think it's amazing that someone who literally ran rapid response war room stuff for a presidential campaign of a major party can then just transform his career into unbiased political news anchor who gets to sit there and lob really tough questions at the opposition party that his job used to be to defeat. Like, that was his literal job. In any case, Trump campaign agreed to it. President went there. And the reviews were mixed, right? So there are a lot of people saying this is a complete disaster for Trump. He's all over the place. He's just repeating a lot of these bogus sound bites. I would say a lot of the voters who asked questions seemed definitely hostile to him. Not sure that was an accident over there at ABC News. And as I told you yesterday, ABC News said, well, we weren't able to make the time with Joe Biden to do this. Biden campaign couldn't make it happen. Biden is doing one with Anderson Cooper in the friendly confines of CNN sometime soon. We'll see if they have a bunch of Biden skeptical or Biden hostile voters asking him really tough questions, the types of questions he's almost never gotten at all over the course of his entire campaign for president, especially since he became the nominee. I will say this with Trump. Some of these answers are meandering. Some were better, right? Some were meandering, though, or very familiar, where he's sort of just reciting the same talking points that haven't been moving the needle for him, right? It's not like the American people haven't heard what he's been saying. He's out there saying it constantly. He needs to think very carefully about, if he wants to win this election, win these debates, he needs to think about how he's going to respond to things and really make a new case to some voters. Unfortunately, there are reports that Trump is barely preparing for these debates. I would not underestimate Joe Biden. I think that was a mistake at the Democratic convention. But even if Biden is underwhelming, incumbents who don't prepare and shrug off that first debate generally don't do very well. And Trump happens to be behind in this election. So I would recommend focusing. It's the Guy Benson Show.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network, The Campaign with Brett Baer.
The president has experienced a bump in recent polling as unrest continues in several parts of the country. Political editor at the National Journal, Josh Krushauer.
He's spending money in Minnesota, a state that Hillary Clinton won. So they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't see movement in the polls, if there wasn't a little movement back in the Republican direction.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcast.com. America's listening to Fox News.
This is House Call for Health. U.S. government health officials say it's possible a COVID-19 vaccine could be approved by early November. Russia claims it already has a vaccine. Too soon? The World Health Organization thinks so.
We're really not expecting to see widespread vaccination until the middle of next year.
Spokesperson Margaret Harris says the testing of a potential vaccine is rigorous and takes time.
This phase 3 must take longer because you need to see how truly protective the vaccine is. You also need to see how safe it is.
The WHO and the Trump administration have been at odds over how the pandemic has been handled. The U.S. has cut off funding for the organization. The head of the WHO says whenever a vaccine is ready, it should be distributed fairly. And he warned against what he called vaccine nationalism. For more on the coronavirus, go to FoxNewsHealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
International terrorism was always someplace else. Nobody was thinking that it would be here.
Fox Nation presents a groundbreaking series about the rise of jihad.
They said the next enemy is the United States.
And the spread of a movement that would change America.
They worked on that as hard as they could to figure another way to bring those towers down.
The Rising Crescent, a groundbreaking documentary series, streaming now only on Fox Nation. Download Fox Nation and start watching the streaming service celebrating America.
This is Fox on Justice. Most Saturdays, Henry Herskowitz goes to synagogue, but not to pray, to protest. He and some others stand outside Temple Beth Israel in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They carry signs protesting Israel's policies toward the Palestinians. One sign says, "Stop U.S. aid to Israel." Some members of the congregation don't like that, but they really don't like the signs that say, "Jewish power corrupts and no more Holocaust movies." Those, they say, are blatantly anti-Semitic. The synagogue and another one next door asked a federal judge to put a stop to the protests, but the judge said no. The demonstrations are protected free speech under the First Amendment. Temple members are planning to appeal. Henry Herskowitz has belonged to an organization that the Southern Poverty Law Center labeled a Holocaust-denying hate group. Herskowitz says he's not anti-Semitic. In fact, he's Jewish and used to attend services at Beth Israel until he had a falling out with them. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
From the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Baltimore Orioles shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., the Iron Man, broke the record for most consecutive games played, 2,131. The record had been held for 56 years before that by Lou Gehrig.
Well, you know, I see myself as someone that was very lucky and had a good career, and I think that I'm pretty good. I mean, I don't put myself all the way down and not think that I've had a pretty significant career. I've enjoyed being in the presence of all the great players and this collection of players. I sat and talked to Henry Aaron a long time and really enjoyed talking to Kirk Gibson and Pete Rose. I just enjoy being in the environment. Maybe when I get older and you start to look back, you may have a historical view of your career. But right now, I just see myself as a guy that was lucky enough to play baseball for a long time.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
A girl from Illinois who saved a neighbor thanks to her superhero hearing makes today's Dean's List. 13-year-old Casey Brislane received the Girl Scouts Medal of Honor for saving Susie Schubert. The national award is given to Girl Scouts who save another person's life. Casey says she was watching TV back in early January when she started to notice the faint sound of someone yelling for help outside her family's home in the Cook County village of Harwood Heights. She ran outside and found Susie, her neighbor, wedged underneath a car following a fall. Her face was beneath a tailpipe, and she had broken an arm and twisted her legs on top of the ice. Susie says when the paramedics arrived, she was so cold they couldn't give her medication through an IV until she warmed up. Casey didn't leave her side, and Susie says she's her guardian angel. Casey, you're amazing and a true superhero. You made the Dean's List. Janice Dean, Fox News.
GuyBensonShow.com.
We are back on the program. You just heard the website, GuyBensonShow.com, where the podcast is always free. Joined now by Jessica Tarlaw, Fox News contributor, head of research at Bustle, a Democrat here on the show. Jesse, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Guy.
You know, if I recall correctly, last time you were on the show, we had a luxuriously long conversation, and you agreed with everything that I said about Nancy Pelosi. So given that, I do want to start with something a little bit lighter before we move to politics, because sometimes you and I sort of have our little Peloton-related sessions here on the air, which I'm sure is thrilling to everyone. I learned something new on the bike the other day. I sometimes do rides with Allie Love. I like her. I know she's a little bit polarized. Some people think she's too cheerful. I think she's delightful. And I learned that she was earlier in her career a Knicks city dancer for the New York Knicks.
Oh.
And
yeah.
is currently the in arena. Well, I guess not currently because there's no fans. But her gig, for the most part, these days, if there were normal basketball, she's the in arena sort of like MC slash hostess. Yeah, she's like the hype person, MC hostess for the Brooklyn Nets, which I think is pretty cool. I had no idea that part of her career existed. You knew this, apparently?
I did know this only because I know someone who grew up with a player that was on the Nets for a couple of years. He's now in Dallas. They'd grown up in Dallas. And so I had gone to a Nets Mavericks game when Dallas was in town and seen her. And this was pre Peloton. And I remember thinking, like, this girl is so fun, but I didn't know about the New York City Knicks dancing component of it, even though I grew up in New York City and have seen many a Knicks girl. But so I did know, but it is a nice element of her story for sure.
And just the only reason I brought it up is because I'm sitting there in misery exercising, and I'm like, okay, here's a Peloton story and something related to the NBA. I have to tell Jessica Tarlaw about it. And rather than just being a normal human being and texting you, I was like, I'm going to talk about it with her on the air. So let's move on to perhaps more pressing issues. You know, I think that based on previous conversations that we've had on air and also privately, you and I see a little bit more eye to eye on the issue of Israel than we do on other issues. Not exactly, but closer. I wonder, as you watched yesterday, the Abraham Accords, these Arab-Israeli peace deals being signed, what's your reaction? What do you make of those developments?
I'm really pleased with them. No solution in the Middle East is going to please everybody. I mean, even on the left, there is so much fracturing over what people, you know, think about what to do with the Gaza Strip, West Bank. But I think that it was a great day for Israel. It was a great day for us. And I think that Bahrain and the UAE see obviously great benefit for themselves diplomatically and financially for making this move. And there was one person in attendance that to me mattered more than anybody else. And I'm not going to say it was the president. It was Chaim Sabin, who's an Israeli-American media mogul and investor, and he's a huge Democratic donor. And he had a fundraiser for Joe Biden with only 22 people that raised almost $5 million about 3 days before this event. And the fact that he was in attendance to me signaled that this is something that we all need to celebrate, right? Like, this is a guy that has raised millions, tens of millions of dollars for Democrats, has never flirted with Republicans at all, and he was there in attendance. So that mattered a lot to me.
I saw this clip. It made the rounds yesterday on social media. It was 2016, after the election. An interview with the former Secretary of State John Kerry making a prediction. Let's listen to Cut 21.
Kerry is also concerned about the Middle East, where he spent 9 months trying to secure peace between the Israelis and Palestinians. He said the president-elect's campaign pledge to move the U.S. embassy to the disputed city of Jerusalem would inflame the Arab world.
You'd have an explosion, an absolute explosion in the region.
Now, I don't think he meant an explosion of peace deals, but that's sort of what we're getting. And so here's the thing, and part of that's a gotcha, and I think the Obama administration's foreign policy was a complete complete dumpster fire in many ways. However, setting that off to the side, is there a moment for some people in sort of the foreign policy mainstream or the establishment in both parties who made a lot of pretty bold mm-hmm. predictions saying, you know, if Trump does this thing that presidents from both parties have promised for decades, Congress has voted for it, moving the embassy, they're saying it's going to completely light the entire region on fire when you kill Soleimani as, you know, a terrorist leader and a combatant who is on foreign soil illegally, you know, that's going to create World War III. I just wonder if you're part of this bipartisan establishment on foreign policy and you make a lot of big, really bold predictions about disastrous things that are going to happen if certain actions are taken, then the actions are taken and the opposite things occur. Is it time maybe to, I don't know, evince a little bit more humility on this, maybe change the way we think about what is possible in that region? How do you think about those questions?
I think that a standard that we apply to normal humans can never be applied to politicians because they have, unfortunately, learned that admitting fault, admitting, you know, human mistakes doesn't benefit them. And so they just drive ahead, and both sides do this, right? Mitch McConnell's famous for it. Nancy Pelosi has obviously been taking pointers from him, and now, you know, she just plows through anything with the point that she wants to make, no matter what the question was. And that has worked to their benefit. So I would like to see, not even so much for people to get credit for things, and this isn't about me not wanting Trump to get credit for things, but just so that we could have a little bit of a nicer discourse. You know, I'm very tired of the end of the world coming every day and the hyperbole about everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Donald Trump is a terrible president. I think there have been very, very bad outcomes from his presidency. I also know that, and I'm knocking on wood right now, I'm going to wake up tomorrow, and I'll continue to fight to get Democrats elected and all of the things that I believe in. And I think that this is how you turn people off from voting, from civic engagement. You know, if your news intake is just people screaming that the world is over, they're going to be disenchanted from the process. And there are important stories also that then get missed because people are not focusing on them, not paying attention, like this whistleblower complaint about the private prison that was giving immigrant women hysterectomies. I don't know if you saw this.
Yeah, it's an allegation.
Yes, there's right. So there's a whistleblower allegation. Like a story like that, you know, which should be getting, I think, a lot more attention than it does, can get lost in conversations about people just screaming at each other about whatever it is that is top of mind to them at that exact moment. So, yes, I wholeheartedly agree with you about it.
And I think that actually applies to the peace deals. I think there's a lot of people who are dutifully covering it just a little bit because you kind of have to, but they don't want to talk about it too much because mm-hmm. the wrong people might get the credit. And, it's, you know, we want this narrative of everything is terrible and getting worse because of this president. And then when you have these historic peace deals, sort of like, well, that doesn't really fit. Let's swim past that real quick. So let's turn to the campaign, Jesse. I've read a number of stories now about some Democrats. Now, look, let's just stipulate Joe Biden, based on all the polling, is mm-hmm. the favorite. He's ahead. He's ahead nationally. He's narrowly ahead in these swing states. I think it's a complete toss-up dogfight for the Senate. You know, that's basically how I see things right now. There are mm-hmm. occasional stories about how Democrats are getting antsy about the Hispanic vote and also getting mm-hmm. antsy about the lack of ground game and ground effort, door knocking, that sort of thing, from Democrats, because the Biden campaign are saying, okay, we have to go with the thing that it's not safe, so we're not doing those things. One of their top officials was just quoted saying, door knocking and that kind of thing doesn't matter this year. What do you think of that? Because it's if Biden wins, I know it's a weird year and the circumstances are extenuating, but just like Trump sort of rewrote some of the rules in 2016, if Biden wins running this barely campaign this time around, that could also really scramble what we think we know.
So I, You know, I disagree with the premise that this is running barely a campaign. And I know that it picked up more in earnest, obviously, post-Labor Day. Well, the week before Labor Day with, you know, going to Kenosha. But Biden and Kamala are all over the place, and they have a ton of surrogates that are doing, you know, a lot of media, including appearing on Fox, which I'm appreciative of. But, yes, I think that this cycle, and we talked about this right after the RNC and the DNC, is really going to change how campaigns are done, that people have seen that it can be effective this way. But we are dealing with a very special kind of election. And I know every year or every 4 years, it's like, this is the most important election of our lifetime. You have 95% of the electorate already having made up their mind, and you have one candidate in Donald Trump who is extremely polarizing, right? And so Joe Biden is basically substitute for generic Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. Like he is just a Democrat to a lot of people. And so his campaign can be a little bit different because he doesn't need to introduce himself in the same way. I think for a lot of people, his policies don't matter as much as they did when they were meeting Barack Obama or they were meeting Bill Clinton, right? Because it's like, I can stand another 4 years or I can't. And whatever you're giving me, I'm going to take. And I think that that informs this election more so than the change in how we're getting it done. But I think there will be changes, especially when people see what you can, the kind of money you can raise by having virtual fundraisers all the time and the access you can provide people. Like, I can't believe it that, you know, in just the past few days, I watched the Princess Bride cast, you know, read the script on Sunday night to benefit Wisconsin Democrats. Then on Monday, got to see Hillary and Kamala and Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph. And I'm going to attend one for the finance community to see how Joe Biden answers questions about his tax plan. I mean,
Jesse, I just want to make sure, am I hearing this correctly? Are you saying that there were Hollywood celebrities campaigning and fundraising for Democrats?
They were, but wow. The difference is that people like me who only give $100, $200 maybe to go to an event can now see that. I mean, the doors have been opened to all of us to be able to attend these events. And I think that that makes a substantive difference in how people feel about the candidates and how they feel about the process. So, yes, Hollywood is always on the side of Democrats, but it is different that I can go to multiple fundraisers a week as someone who doesn't have a ton of money to spend.
Virtually, you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's virtual.
So let's also turn, because there's actual policy stuff happening or not happening, as it were, right now with the campaign as the backdrop. We saw the filibuster from the Senate Democrats. Every Senate Democrat voted to filibuster this Republican bill to even get onto it and debate it on COVID-19 relief. They're also talking about getting rid of the filibuster, though they're going to use it. But then it's going to be racist. They want to get rid of it. We'll see how that all plays out. But in the meantime, there's a lot of people, business owners, families, parents, individuals, unemployed, who are really struggling right now. And there are questions about, mm-hmm. you know, testing and supply chains. And the Republican bill would have addressed a lot of that, not all of it. The Democrats have their own bill that the media, even the sort of liberal media, said, yeah, this is not a realistic bill. We saw yesterday the Problem Solvers Caucus in the House, Republicans and Democrats, mm-hmm. they came up with sort of a compromise piece of legislation that's a lot closer to what sort of everyone in D.C. kind of intuitively says, yeah, that's what the compromise would look like if they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, is there any chance that, you know, I'm of course, very, very hostile about Nancy Pelosi these days. You're not a fan of Mitch McConnell's. Is there any chance that those two people might say, fine, the people need help. I know there's a lot of election stuff happening and things at stake. Let's go with that compromise because it's fairly normal and not crazy. Is there any chance that happens in the next 2 months?
I think so. Yeah, I do think so. And I think that, I mean, there's a two-part motivation. One, I do think that people have, you know, concerns about the American public, but we also have an election coming up. And Mitch McConnell is acutely aware of the fact that his Senate majority is very much in question on November 3rd. And all of the new polling indicates that, right? Jamie Harrison tied in South Carolina with Lindsey Graham, Sarah Gideon ahead of Susan Collins. We know Cory Gardner's in trouble. Kelly.
Just as a small note, those were Quinnipiac polls that you just referenced. And for the for reference, I will just say they both had Andrew Gillum and Bill Nelson winning by 8 points the day before the election. And they were off by 9 points. So I think Quinnipiac has had some garbage polling. But I think you're right. I think things are tighter. Things are tighter for in South Carolina than Lindsey Graham would like. And Susan Collins, who typically wins easily in Maine, is at best an exact toss up, right? So you're right. Yeah. There's a lot at stake here, and a lot of these incumbents want to vote for stuff. There's no question about that, and that's also true of House Democrats in some purple-ish red districts too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my point was just that people are thinking about electoral futures right now, but on both sides, and Washington loves to do small fixes that kicks the can down the road for 2-3 months, and then we do it all again. And I would imagine that this will be no different. And I think that, you know, moving in smaller piecemeal sections benefits Republicans more, because if a vaccine does come out and there is, you know, some massive change in the way the coronavirus is affecting Americans, they would rather have committed to something more
less money,
short-term, less money. Yeah.
Sure, especially since we still haven't spent billions from the first round, and we're talking about the fourth round here. So that's all fair. We've got to leave it there for now, though. Jessica Tarlov, we covered a lot of ground here on the Guy Benson Show. A fun interview. Fox News contributor, head of research at Bustle, our friend here. Jesse, always appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Guy.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to a new generation of talk. Generation of talk. Guy Benson.
These days, being prepared for the unknown is more important than ever. I'm sure you've noticed the world we live in today is anything but predictable. We could all benefit from something reliable right about now. Well, what could be more reliable than real gold and silver? I'm asking you that. I'm talking about real gold and silver that you can hold in your hands if you choose. Call the Oxford Gold Group and do it right now. Learn how easy it is to get real gold and silver sent securely to your hands, to your home, or have real gold and silver placed directly into your IRA, or maybe have a 401k or both. Call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-600-GOLD. They're waiting for you. Ask for your free guide on owning gold and silver. Don't feel like you got to know all about it. That's what the guide is for, and that's why it's free. So call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-600-GOLD. That's the Oxford Gold Group. I've been telling you about this. It's the only gold company that I trust. So call them right now. You have a pen? Call them right now at 833-600-GOLD, 833-600-GOLD. That's 833-600-G-O-L-D.
More time at home means more time to grill, and nothing tastes better off the grill than perfectly aged and tender Omaha steaks. Get the world's best steaks and a huge variety of other favorites shipped directly to your door. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter the code DELISH in the search bar, and for this week, Omaha Steaks will add 4 burgers and 4 gourmet jumbo franks free when you order the Grill Out's favorite package. Going to the grocery store has become such a hassle. Skip the crowds and order Omaha Steaks today. Omahasteaks.com, keyword DELISH.
With so many new pet owners, Kezia's Grooming can't keep up.
Kezia's Grooming? Sorry, we'll book solid through the weekend. I can give you a call back, though, if something opens up.
It's time to hire.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. The moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined, according to Breezy HR 2019. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. Plus, when you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. That's not all. Hear your favorite podcasts from Dana Perino, Bill Hemmer, Martha McCallum, Brett Baer, and many more. Just hit schedule, set your alarm, and click listen. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. America's listening to Fox News.
saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. Winter is coming, but that's not a tease for a new season of Game of Thrones. But with the colder weather on the horizon, it means outdoor dining will soon come to an end. John Arena owns the Chestnut Hill Grill in Philadelphia.
Once the dining outside is closed and once it gets cold, it will definitely be a struggle.
It's not just restaurants. As the pandemic continues, many people are looking to extend the outdoor dining season at home. One way to do that is buying an outdoor heat lamp or a fire pit. Retailers say sales are hot for both electric and propane models. Wayfair, the online furniture retailer, says searches for patio heaters jumped by more than 70% over recent years. Home Depot also reporting strong demand. And if you do find them, you might get a chill when you see the price tag. A high-end model sells for nearly $350, although smaller heaters will run you much less. Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
Covering a presidential election is a sacred trust.
And we take it seriously. We never stop working to get you the information you need.
From the caucuses to the conventions to election night and beyond.
We're there for you, uncovering the stories that shape the race.
Tracking the candidates and the moments that matter most.
Because this election will decide the fate of our nation.
And the future of the world.
Democracy 2020. It's in your hands. Fox News. America is watching.
Reese Davis of ESPN coming up next on The Guy Benson Show. I just want to bring you this. Axios reporting that the vandalism and looting from the riots following the death of George Floyd and all the other various permutations of these riots around the country will cost the insurance industry more than any other violent demonstrations in recent history. The price tag currently looking at between $1 and $2 billion in insurance claims. And as we know, that takes a long time to sort out, and people don't get made fully whole the way that they're expecting to in some cases. We told you about Minneapolis businesses being shocked by that. And it's not just property. Setting aside all the human damage and assaults and killings and that sort of thing, this property is about people's livelihoods and stuff that they've built for a lifetime. And now we have billions of dollars in damage from, quote, mostly peaceful protests. I want to bring you that update on The Guy Benson Show. Next hour, coming up.
Are you a survivor of sexual abuse while in the Boy Scouts? You may be entitled to compensation, no matter how long ago the abuse happened, but your time to file a claim is limited. Call 1-800-609-9559. That's 1-800-609-9559 for more information. As a result of thousands of victims filing sexual abuse claims, the Boy Scouts have filed for bankruptcy protection, and the bankruptcy court has set November 16, 2020, as the deadline for abuse survivors to file a claim. As a result of this bankruptcy, a victim's compensation fund is being set up that may be worth over $1.5 billion. If you are a survivor of sexual abuse while in the Boy Scouts, you may be entitled to compensation. Call 1-800-609-9559. That's 1-800-609-9559. And talk to one of the compassionate counselors for more information and to see if you may qualify. Your call is completely confidential. Call 1-800-609-9559 today. Sponsored by Mark J. Burnham Partners, LLC.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
On March 5th, 1946, Sir Winston Churchill gave his famous Iron Curtain speech at Westminster College in Missouri. The speech was deemed by many to mark the onset of the Cold War.
From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the world. Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe. All these famous cities and the populations around them lie in what I must call the Soviet sphere. And all are subject, in one form or another, not only to Soviet influence, but to a very high and in some cases increasing measure of control from Moscow. This is certainly not the liberated Europe we fought to build up.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.